everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Your Biggest Fan Girl podcast. I am one of your hosts, Victoria Male. And we are super excited to welcome a fellow epic fangirl duo on the podcast today. So we have here with us Monica Duarte and Emily Shuck. We are welcoming back Monica and introducing you to Emily. Monica and Emily are the masterminds behind Portrait of a Fangirl, a new web series hosted on Temple of Geek, to which both Monica and Emily are contributors. At the core of the project is the necessity of telling the stories of women who have found inspiration, growth, and power through fandom. They interview several inspiring women about how their diverse and fascinating fandoms have enriched their lives, both professionally and personally. You'll remember Monica from episode 18. She is a photographer who can proudly claim her photos have been published in Doctor Who magazine and SFX magazine, and also co-hosts the Temple of Geek podcast. In addition to Emily's contributions to the Temple of Geek podcast, their convention highlights, and more, she is also a writer and editor of the Foothill Journal, which publishes graduate student poetry at Claremont Graduate University. So two power women are here with us. And also, I should say that I am one of the fangirls that they interviewed. I don't know if I was an inspiring woman, but Monica followed me around LA and we took a bunch of pictures. And then I screamed about, like, I think, like, Spider-Girl for an hour in my interview.
You know, what was really cool about doing that interview with you was that I felt like I already knew you. But doing that interview with you, I was like, wow, there's, like, this whole other deep layer to you that I had no idea, and that's one thing that I find so interesting is that, like, doing these interviews, you're barely scratching the surfaces of, like, who these women are, and every layer you go in deeper and deeper, it's just so exciting and so inspiring, and you especially.
Oh, so. Be quiet. but I think this is super fun, because now we're turning the interview mic on you two to talk about this.
So, we kind of know a little bit about what you both are interested, but what are you both currently fangirling over?
So, right now, I'm super obsessed with The Expanse, which is a show on Amazon. It started on Sci-Fi, but now it's moved over to Amazon Video, and I'm obsessed. I've rewatched the episodes over and over, and season 4 is coming, and I just cannot wait. It's mainly what I'm fangirling over. Also, Raising Dion on Netflix is super interesting, family-friendly superhero show that's a little bit scary, and I really love that show. It's beautifully cast, and Michael B. Jordan, so yay. It was something that I watched with my family, and it was pretty cool.
I'm currently fangirling over a poet right now.
Oh my God. A smart person on the podcast.
So her name is Dawn Lundy Martin, and she actually just finished a week in residence at Claremont Graduate University when she did a ton of readings and a workshop, and we took her out to dinner every night. And it's strange when you spend a lot of time with somebody's work and then you get to know them as a human being. And her work, it's very dark. There's a lot of, like, trauma and the rewriting of trauma, and yet she's this funny, delightful human being. I'm really in love with her right now and her work. And
fantastic. So you guys are both awesome women, and as you see, like, in different spheres of fandom, in some ways and probably others, you two align. So how did you forge this relationship and begin collaborating?
So it started when Emily volunteered herself to write for Temple of Geek, and we met that way. I think I shot her as a model for Temple of Geek Chic, which, Victoria, you've been... Oh, you too, Kristen.
Yeah.
I shot you too. That's kind of how we met. We were in the general same area, and I think a friendship started from there. It really started as, like, a friendship. At least I feel like we just were like, oh, let's hang out. Come over to my place. And we were drinking, having dinner one night when I started telling her about this little idea that I had. And she sat there and was like, well, what about this? What about this? And she literally gave me the feedback, and she was the soundboard that I had not had before. I'd had Nate, who, you know, is my partner in everything, in life and everything, and he was very supportive, but it was different to have Emily just kind of being this incredible soundboard. And she actually helped me articulate ideas that I had, but I couldn't really put down paper and put together. And that's what happened. We just started talking over dinner. And after that, I was like, well, I don't think I could do this without Emily now. Like, I feel like I need her. And it was so nice to have, like, a different perspective. And she really helped me usher these ideas together. And I feel like that's how the collaboration started.
Yeah. And Monica, is this idea really did come from you. And we've talked about how it began as a sort of photography project, which I think it was fabulous. But something that I think about a lot as a person that's in academia is the fanness of academia. There are Karma Cons for James Joyce.
We've done an episode about the Jane Austen summer program at Chapel Hill.
Yeah. So there are these conferences that are about people that are completely obsessed and have made a career about loving these authors. And I think now, especially the field of cultural studies is coming up, and there is a discipline that focuses on comics. And I think that with fandom becoming more popular, it's just such an interesting way to think about it. And the ability to have conversations with Monica about that sort of in this interdisciplinary, different field sort of way was just so inspiring to me. And to be able to make something, to say, we're going to think about these women who are absolutely incredible and their lives are changing through these things that they love. And being able to talk about that and being able to think about that was just something that was so attractive to me to do.
I kind of love it. And it kind of proves a little bit that you have to have two sides of everything. If you have two carbon copies of the exact same person, like one person is not necessary.
So right.
It's just kind of like great to have those differences mm-hmm. that really balance you out.
Yeah.
And I love it.
I think that you can't necessarily always capture a look into somebody's life without having a conversation with them. Mm. There is a depth to a video interview where we can get to the core of these inspirations. We can get to the core of these passions in a way that a photograph might not be able to represent. And so the dual nature of that, I think, is because it started as portraits, right?
And I think the portraits are still important because there's like such a stereotype. And we've talked about this a lot, of what a fangirl is supposed to look like. But in my experience, having gone to Comic-Con and meeting people from all different aspects and realms and on the internet, social media, things like that, like there's no definition of what a fangirl looks like. And there's so many like layers. There's so much to what a fangirl can be. And so I think that having the photographs are kind of nice because then you can see, look, these two women love the same things in very similar ways, but they don't look alike. Or you can say, like, these two women love things in different ways and they still don't look alike, or they do look alike. Like, it's just so interesting to have that so that in a way it's like breaking a stereotype. And I hope that's what it does. My goal is to, at least in these pictures, just capture what they love so much in like a very almost a romantic way and not just like, here's my selfie at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I think obviously with the portraits, because you are such a talented photographer and you both have put so much thought in this, I think it took me a lot of thought to think of what like the different expressions of my fandom were going to be, because obviously I was like, so we're going to do like a whole day and there's going to be 8 looks.
That's what I love.
Yeah, yeah. Other than like a selfie, like there's this level of sophistication with the portraits that I think is important.
Yeah.
Thank you. And one thing that was really interesting is seeing what these women chose to wear and where they wanted to shoot. Some of them were my suggestions, let's go here and there, because either they didn't know where to shoot. But like one of the things, like Brianna, she's a really popular cosplayer, and I've only ever seen her at conventions in full cosplay. So seeing her outside of cosplay and shooting in areas that were like kind of around where she lives and things like that was really refreshing and really cool. Mm-hmm. And you get to know them on a different level. It's really, really exciting. And like we shot for her in like an anime store.
Fun.
And that was fun. And we shot in different little like bookstores and things like that. And that was so interesting to me to see her like in a different light. It was really fun to see what every different person shot. Like Tiffany, for example, she's a chef. And we shot in her kitchen for some of those. And that was really cool. Just everybody's been so different and I love it.
I think too, just like the necessity of celebrating these voices. Because if we think about sort of canon in the MCU or canon in like the academic setting, like what has everybody read? You know, 1984, Catcher in the Rye. And these are voices of like the dead white man. And it's just, it's so tiresome. So highlighting women, and telling these stories is a way to really to celebrate voices that have been historically undermined. And I think that that is, it's not just crucial for like the comic book and the fandom world right now, but it's crucial for our cultural moment, period.
I would agree. Well, it was so interesting when you two were explaining your personal yin and yang and thinking about our personal yin and yang and how having an academic component of this podcast has been essential to us from day one. But I think it's so interesting because you're talking about conferences, and I think about the Jane Austen Summer Program, and it's so interesting that women are really leading this charge into expanding what is worth academic study and reflection. Like, I also think of one of our previous guests, Carrie Lynn Reinhardt, who does pop culture studies. It's very interesting that women are leading this charge, and then how now we feel empowered to do so. That it is this cultural moment that we have seized upon.
That Supernatural episode that you just really did.
Dr. Zuverness, I love her.
Oh my God, that spoke to me so deeply. And I don't watch Supernatural, but how she looks at fandom and the studies she's done and the books she's written, like, I can't wait to pick up her books because I just love the fact that the way she's like studying fandom. And I feel like your podcast, and this is why it's my favorite podcast, is such a great look. No, it takes a smart look at fandom, and it doesn't undermine fandom, and it just showcases like how talented all the different people in fandom are. And I love that about your podcast. And I listen in all the time, and I'm just like, oh, these are the conversations I want to have. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's appealing with having a friend like Emily, is that like we're having these conversations that I can't have with like other people. Like, I don't know who to have these conversations
with. Yeah, with the majority of people in your life.
For me, it's refreshing on the flip side. I am surrounded by like poets and academics like all the time. And it's exhausting because there's a level of performance to that where, you know, you're trying to explain that like you understand Foucault or something ridiculous. And it's just so nice to be around people that are just normal people.
I just want to geek out. And yeah. Oh my God, he's so hot.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong having that yin and yang. Yeah. How have you both personally been empowered by fandom?
For me, fandom was always just kind of something that I enjoyed, and I was lucky that I had a partner in life and children in my life that I could share my fandom, and I was able to be myself and just totally enjoy it without fear of somebody like shaming me or anything like that. So I was lucky to have that in my life, but I never would have in a million years thought that it would be something that I want to do professionally or as a career or anything like that until I started working with like the people at Temple of Geek or doing photography. And then suddenly I was like, oh wow, this can be bigger. This can be something else. And in a million years, it's not something that I would have thought like, oh, I'd be recording a podcast every week or I'd be trying to do a web series or something like that. But it helped me find something in myself that I didn't know was there. And I think I've always had like a creative inkling, but I did not know that it could be something. I never saw myself doing the things that I'm doing now or interviewing the people that I've interviewed. These were people that lived on my TV. And now like I have this way of interacting with them professionally, and it's so empowering. And it was something that I would have never thought I could do. And I wouldn't have been able to do any of that if it wasn't for my excitement and enthusiasm and fandom.
Yeah, I think right along those lines, for me, it's very much about connection. My students the other day, it was the end of class, and one of them was like, how old are you? Have you watched this show? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm not telling you how old I am because you're old enough to know, not to ask that question to anybody. But there was this moment, and I hadn't, but the girl sitting next to her had, and they flipped out because they were both so excited about this thing. And I think they left and like went and got lunch together. That for me, it's a connection. You can build connections with people that you might not otherwise meet or might not know. And I get like little butterflies in my stomach even just thinking about it.
Interesting. No, nobody that I haven't run into anybody that was reluctant. I think the process started with I picked two people that I personally knew that I found interesting. And that was Victoria and Tiffany. Tiffany was kind of one of the first people that I looked into interviewing because her fandom didn't have anything to do with career or ambition or anything. She just loved to love things. And so that's where it started. And then I think just we were talking back and forth about finding women that we didn't know and, you know, different types of women. But I didn't find anybody that was reluctant.
Like, would you ever be like, hey, do you want to go talk about something that you like? Would you be like, I don't know.
Everybody has been really enthusiastic and interested in having these conversations, which that's been helpful for us, yeah. I think.
And then we went with a few people that we didn't know. So I was scared that they'd be like, okay, weirdo.
Who are you?
Lucy, for example, she works in a comic book store, and her story is really interesting because she didn't know anything about comics. It was literally her friend opened a business. They were like, can you help us out and like work with us? And she was like, sure, I guess. And then she became obsessed with comics. She just found fandom recently, like literally like in the last 2 years. And like she's dug in so deep and her heart is so into it. And so I thought she was interesting because she didn't have a long history with fandom. So that's like a new perspective. Right now she's really enthusiastic because she's just learning about all these things through working at the store. And I didn't know her. I found her on Instagram. I'd never really had a conversation with her before, but like she came across my Explorer feed and she doesn't post pictures of herself really. She just kind of posts pictures of comic books and things like that. And she only posts things about herself kind of in her Instagram stories. And so through that, I was like, oh, you're interesting. Like, I want to talk to you. And I reached out and she was like, yeah, sure. And we shot in her friend's comic book store. They were very nice. They let us shoot there. And everybody's been really, really cool. And she is like a complete stranger. Like, you know, it's gone really well so far.
I think that's also just echoing what we've been saying, and especially you, Emily, about how fandom can be such a uniting force. Mm-hmm. It can be an area of comfort where you feel comfortable opening up to strangers and forging these connections.
Absolutely.
Further on that, you've been able to interview a diverse group of women and hear their experiences when it comes to fandom and their own definitions of fangirling. How have your own views of fangirling changed through these interviews?
For me, I mean, I've learned so much about the different expressions of the way that fandom can look. I'm thinking about Tiffany right now, like her beautiful tattoos and the way that she works kind of like her fandom into her job and all of that. And I think it's really destabilized what we think of as a fangirl. And I mean, like, we didn't approach this project being like, there's only one kind of fangirl, but
yeah, and they're all crazy.
Yeah. But just seeing all these different expressions has really, I feel so grateful to hear these stories and just see the ways that the real concrete manifestations of fangirling and how those affect people's lives is something I didn't really understand how powerful it was. And that's been just a delight to learn.
I think one thing that I'm really seeing is, so you interviewed a few women that were about 10 to 15 years younger than me. I grew up where fandom wasn't as mainstream as it on. I didn't have Marvel movies growing up, you know. I was lucky that I got the Batman movie with Michael Keaton in it and Batman Returns and sometimes a couple other Batman movies, but like the Spider-Man movies, the Star Wars prequels, all those didn't happen until I was an adult.
Right.
And so interviewing people that grew up with those and have always lived in a life where, like, the MCU was there and Harry Potter was there and things like that. They were teenagers and they were kids when those were coming up. That really changed the way I kind of saw people because I was used to kind of, like, nobody understanding me. But when you grow up where people do understand you, it's really interesting to see like how powerful that can be for people. I guess it didn't change the way I saw things. I just didn't know that there was other ways to have lived or to have grown up, or people who grew up going to Comic-Con all their lives, where I've just discovered it in the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And for them to always have been in that, like, I just didn't realize how little I knew is basically the biggest thing for me. Like, I've barely scratched the surface of fandom. There's so much to it, and I didn't know that before.
It's so rich. There's such a richness and a diverseness to it, and opportunities to learn about things that you didn't know about before. And I've just been so appreciative and just grateful.
Or other aspects of their life professionally. And as much as we love to talk about making your fandom and attention when you work within the industry, whereas, like, I guess working at UNC, I'm like, okay. So have you made any discoveries in that vein of keeping that balance?
I mean, I do think about this and I kind of grapple with it because when you go like on the market, like a cow is what they call it in academia, these institutions like Brown or Bard, or they're going to Google you. And like Temple of Geek is going to come up when I get Googled. And I worry that these are people that have been in the academy for a really long time. And I worry that perhaps they're not going to take me seriously. Sure, maybe my academic publications will come up, but like, honestly, people visit Temple of Geek more than they visit JSTOR or like Modernism Modernity. So I think about that and I worry about it. And I've actually really considered changing my geek into like a pseudonym. So I am worried about it. And it's something that I continue to grapple with. And I don't really know how to approach it or what to do about it. And thankfully, I'm not on the market, you know, for a couple more years. So that's going to be different. But yeah, I struggle with it. Yeah. And I hate that I struggle with it.
But yeah, I think it's so difficult because we're doing the work. And it's hard because I think there's a good amount of fangirls and fanboys and fan non-binaries who feel like they have this elevated and evolved idea of what a fan is. But like the problem is we're still in process and that's not the general perception. So it is really difficult. It's like, I know that my podcast is really smart and interesting and hopefully still fun to listen to. But I feel like if I give the quick pitch to someone, like I've been afraid to date. Because also it's like, you know, fangirls like, oh, she loves actors. It's this very fine line to walk. And that's why I think also fandom should be in your life only to serve you. So if you need to find places where you have to draw the boundary, because there's also this thing where you should be able to fangirl as much as you want. And that shouldn't mean you're any less of a fangirl. Because there's also the flip side of that where you're not enough of a fan with gatekeeping.
And I think, too, when you're talking about boundaries, like, we're already kind of, like, delayed on Portrait of a Fangirl. But also because, like, last week I was talking to them and I'm like, I would rather be super late and not have her stress out. Because she's doing, like, all the video editing, all this stuff. I go, when this stops being fun, it's not work anymore. One of my worries is always, like, not delivering when we say we're going to deliver. Well, I'd rather not give a delivery date.
Yeah.
Let's just chill. Let's just do this. And the minute, like, it's not fun anymore, like, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's so many things in our lives, our regular jobs, everything that we're doing that we have to do out of obligation, or it's not, it's just work, right? And the fun thing about being a fan is that you get to like things. So the minute that this gets too much is when I'm like, all right, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be stressed out about something that's supposed to be fun.
Right.
I think that's a great point too, because I think early on, I think we tried to go straight through even with this podcast. And then I was like, we need to have some sort of a hiatus in the middle of the year just to give us time to reset and everything. Because we do have full-time jobs and you have to be able to balance a lot of that. And or even financially, you can't go out to do every convention that you want because eventually you're bank account or your credit card company will start calling you. So what's great about the conversation that we're having is that we're talking about all these different aspects of the event, fandom interacts with your life. And so I'm so grateful that you guys are continuing this conversation. But going back to the picture of the fangirl, what do you hope people will take away from this when it's fully released and all the episodes are out?
So I hope that they just find something that they connect to. I don't want to like give it a narrative and I don't want to say this is what we're focusing on or anything. I just want people to tell their stories and somebody out there might connect with them. There is something that, and I'll go back to Brianna, that she said about geeks of color. There's a thing in culture like where if you do things that are considered, oh, something that white people do, then you're not ethnic enough. You're not like Hispanic enough or black enough or whatever. It's like you're stepping away from your culture. Mm-hmm. And in the way society's been set up, you know, in the past and even now, like sometimes you have to suppress your culture to be taken seriously. But then within your own culture, people are like, oh, I can't believe you suppressed your culture. And so when Rihanna was talking about that, I was like, oh, I feel you. Like, I understand. Like, I get that so much. And while she was talking and I was filming, I was just like, yeah, girl, I just wanted to hype everyone. Like, I get it. Like, I hear what you're saying. So I just hope somewhere out there, somebody else finds a connection where they might not feel as isolated. I know that social media is huge and I know that the world is huge, but like in my life, up until the time that I met Nate, I felt very isolated in my fandom. And I never got made fun of or anything like that. People tolerated me. They're like, oh, it's a quirk. Oh, that's your thing. You're such a dork. But nobody really understood me. And so I hope that maybe somebody out there will be like, oh, I get that. I understand you. Or they find something where they don't feel like nobody gets them.
Mm-hmm. Everything that Monica said, absolutely. The thing that I've been thinking about the most is redefining fangirl. Actually, Monica wrote a fantastic article about the toxicity of the culture, and I'm pretty sure the New Yorker riffed off that.
She was like, you wrote this. I'm like, I know.
Yeah. So I'm like, gosh, New Yorker. But they wrote this article about the toxicity of fandom, and they talk about stanning, actually. I was rereading it this morning, prepping for this podcast. So stan is like, what is
stalker
this?
Fan?
Stalker fan. And the way that like fans will vehemently defend the people that they love. And I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of the fact that loving something and being inspired and becoming a better person is looked down upon. I'm so tired of it. And so my goal is really to say, look at these fantastic people and look at the work that they do and to showcase that and to work against that. So
I love that. Because you're inspired by a piece of art.
Exactly.
And so I think there's been codified like what's acceptable to be inspired by and what's kind of like base. Like, again, if something's popular, it must not have merit or a certain amount of merit.
Yeah.
And then there is social media, Monica, what you're saying, but that's also an expanse.
Yeah.
But I think it's really special to have this kind of very distilled, elevated, sophisticated expression of that where people can connect in a safe space.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And that safety, I think, is huge too. Going back to what Monica was saying about being able to connect in a community, how important to create these safe spaces. And that's the work that I hope that we can do.
Would you rather your show be canceled at its peak or have it drag on for too many seasons?
Canceled at its peak.
Mm.
Definitely. I look at The Good Place, which is a show that I absolutely like love so much. And they have just recently decided to cancel at its peak, even though they can renew for another season and they'd be good to go. But they were like, no, we don't want to drag this on. We think our story ends now. And they really made this like smart decision to just kind of like tell a really good story in four seasons versus dragging it out and having a bunch of bad seasons.
Right. Yes. I sort of wish they'd stop making Star Wars movies to some degree.
That is not my wish. Bring the Star Wars movies.
And when it drags out for too many seasons, some of that is just like it's a money-making tool.
Right.
You know? Absolutely. And like, is that a good reason to tell a story?
So,
Monica,
I've really been thinking about this. And I think that if you had asked me this before the 13th Doctor, I would say I would rather time travel with like a companion. I would want to be the doctor and everything. The embargo will be up by the time that this podcast comes out, so I can talk about it now. But I've been playing the Doctor Who VR game that they sent to me, and I've been flying the TARDIS, like as the doctor. And it was so emotional that I cried. It was insane. The VR quality is so great. And so in the VR game, the doctor's there with you and she's talking you through it. It's Jodie Whittaker's like 13th doctor. It's her TARDIS console. And so I'm the companion. I would have thought that I would have wanted to be the doctor and you know, but no, it's really cool being the companion. And she's like, hey, grab this. Help me with this. Oh, this is what you have to do. And I'm just like, oh, shit, Jodie Whittaker's talking to me. So.
We're best friends.
So I'm not in the Doctor Who fandom. Mm-hmm. I've given it a good college try. Mm-hmm. That isn't to say that I'm not going to give it a college try again.
Okay.
But I think I'd like to be a companion just because I think I like to be companions in real life. I prefer to be the right-hand man as opposed to
leading the charge.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. If an evil supervillain were to take over the world, would you rather have to take down Lord Voldemort or Emperor Palpatine?
I think Voldemort would be easier, mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with that.
I feel Voldemort would be easier in the sense that he wouldn't psychologically torture me as much as, like, a Palpatine. Palpatine, like, straight up, like, manipulated Anakin. He was playing both sides for a long time, and not only him, but manipulated so many people. And what would the emotional trauma of that be like in real life? Like, I could probably write a whole paper on just, like, with the abuse victims, because they'd be victims of abuse. What they would probably, their lives would be like if, like, all that was real. So I think Voldemort, because he was just straight up, like, I'm just going to go kill a bunch
of people. Yeah, no, he was evil and owned it. He's like, yeah. I'm the worst.
So, like you said, I think it'd be easier because at least that's like an evil you can fight. But when you're being manipulated,
you don't know it.
Palpatine is deeply, deeply frightening to me.
Great answer. Would you rather be on a team of superheroes where you are the only one with superpowers, or on a team where everyone else has powers except for you?
I think I would rather not have powers. I think having superpowers in the comic book sense is complicated, right? Great power, great responsibility. I do think that even if I didn't have what we traditionally think about as superpowers, we all have our own superpowers. I don't need to be bitten by a magic spider to help my team of superpowered people.
And I really agree with Emily on this, and I would go the same thing, but she taught me that.
Aww.
She taught me that in our friendship about, like, you having your own superpowers. And that was really validating to me as a person, because the way she explains owning, like, this is what I'm good at, it's almost like self-validating, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really important for mental health. She always points out, like, oh, that's your superpower. And I'm like, what? It does make you feel like, yeah, like, I am really great at this, and this is a superpower, and I love that. So I'll go with that one, because I feel like I don't need superpowers to be special. And I feel like that's a really good way to live.
Well, I can't think of a better way to wrap up the podcast with those beautiful answers. Where can we find Portrait of a Fangirl?
So we created a Portrait of a Fangirl Instagram where we have the actual portraits of the women that we've been taking pictures of. And we'll be releasing more photos as we start releasing the episodes. But you can find us on Instagram at Portrait of a Fangirl. All of the episodes will be on the Temple of Geek website, as well as the Temple of Geek YouTube channel, and we'll probably release clips on social media as well, but it'll be templeofgeek.com and the YouTube channel for Temple of Geek.
Great. Where can we find you both on social media and support all the other awesome stuff you do?
I am on Instagram at loveme, love my umbrella. On Twitter, I am at Emily Schuck. It's S-C-H-U-C-K.
And I am on Twitter and on Instagram as This Dorky Nerd.
Thank you both so much. It was lovely talking to both of you.
And then if you are all enjoying this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we are most likely there. Thank you so much again, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Our theme song is California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.